many Southeast Asian countries. He represents U.S. returning more to normal.
Today, we examine what the Biden administration faces in Southeast Asia. This is Friday, the 29th of January, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, the U.S. president spends his first week with pen in hand. The president calls for major changes in climate policy. A new report says Australia is having its problems addressing climate change, and the man convicted of beheading a U.S. journalist in Pakistan is set free. That and more on today's VOA Asia. As U.S. President Joe Biden completes his first week in office, we at VOA Asia have been taking a close look at what the new U.S. leader faces in Asia. Today, in our fourth and final segment, we examine the U.S. and Southeast Asia. Joining us is Murray Hebert, chief researcher at the Bauer Group Asia consultancy firm, former reporter in Southeast Asia, and the author of a new book, Under Beijing's Shadow, Southeast Asia's China Challenge. I spoke with Hebert on Skype, asked him about what Biden will find in that area of the world.
For many Southeast Asian countries, he represents U.S. returning more to normal. There's a number of countries like Indonesia, Malaysia were very offended by Trump's Muslim immigration ban. There was a lot of concern about the U.S. America First emphasis, and there was concern about large trade surpluses that many Southeast Asian countries have, countries like Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia.
What about difficult situations such other than the economy now dealing with, let's first take the South China Sea?
There was a quite a bit of respect for what the Trump administration did, particularly in the last half of 2020, when the Trump administration started doing more freedom of navigation operations, when the administration had also continued the sharing of intel information about what China was doing.
What do you think Biden might do differently than Trump did?
We're still trying to figure out exactly what his Biden's trade policies will be. He's announced a Buy America policy, which he had talked about during the campaign. I think there's a little anxiety trying to figure out what that will mean. One of the things that the Biden administration has talked about quite a bit is that they want to be supportive and engaging with allies and partners. That they want to recognize regional groupings and participate in them. That is something that was felt in Southeast Asia that the Trump administration had not really fully understood, that if you want to participate in these institutions, you need to attend meetings. And the Trump administration was only attended sporadically. There's a feeling that Biden and his incoming national security team will understand this. They're a known entity in the region, and that they will step up engagement with the groupings like ASEAN and work with trying to build relations with allies. Maybe easing some of the immigration regulations. It'll be easier again for Southeast Asian students to get into the United States. Their one concern they have is on human rights, a number of countries. I think there's a concern in the Philippines, what will happen. As you know, Duterte has this war on drugs, which was very harshly criticized at the beginning by the Obama administration. Was somewhat it was quite tolerated by the Trump administration, but Biden has said that human rights are going to be more important. The other country that probably faces more scrutiny is Vietnam. Vietnam also has a human rights problem with putting too many bloggers and democracy activists in prison, and that could create some tensions with the United States. There was a feeling in Southeast Asia that Southeast Asia was viewed entirely through the prism of China, and that everything that U.S. policy towards Southeast Asia was related almost exclusively to how is that going to stick it to China. And the Southeast Asians have they happen to be right next door to China. For all of them, China is becoming an increasingly important investor. And that's not to say the U.S. isn't still overall the largest investor, much larger than China. But Southeast Asians would like to have their own place in relations with the United States that is separate from only being a subsidiary of the U.S. policy toward China.
What do you see as flashpoints in Southeast Asia?
The biggest flashpoint, of course, is the South China Sea, that as the U.S. does freedom of navigation exercises, as it's present in the 7th Fleet is present in the South China Sea, it is possible of some military accident that would cause an exchange. China just passed a law late last week that allowing its Coast Guard to fire on vessels. Seems like quite a provocative thing to do within the first few days of a Biden administration.
That was Murray Hebert, expert and author on Southeast Asia. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. World Health Organization investigators exit quarantine in Wuhan to begin their work in search of the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic. India sends 500,000 free doses of COVID-19 vaccine to Sri Lanka on Thursday. Myanmar's military refuses to rule out a coup over election fraud claims. Security is tightened in New Delhi after farmers clash with police. Representatives from the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Organizing Committee say there are no doubts or objections from its partners about Japan hosting the Games this year. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. This is VOA Asia. In his first full week in office, President Joe Biden has focused on reversing multiple Trump administration policies and unveiling plans to address the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as the economy, immigration, and climate change. Michelle Quinn reports on how the flurry of new policies and actions may be received by a deeply divided country.
On this January day,
President Joe Biden came to office on January 20 with a message to unify the nation.
With unity, we can do great things, important things.
In his first full week in office, Biden, a Democrat, has upended many policies enacted by his Republican predecessor, Donald Trump, on energy policy, foreign policy, immigration, and other areas. Most fulfilled Biden campaign promises, but Senator Marco Rubio expressed a view shared by fellow Republicans when he criticized what he called Biden's executive fiats.
We now have a president who talks like a centrist, but is governing from the far left. And we're not going to be able to just sit around here in a honeymoon period and watch these things happen.
Some observers say Biden's actions signal that his administration will make a hard pivot from the Trump presidency. Julia Azari is an associate professor at Marquette University who spoke to VOA over Skype.
It's a signal of really moving in a different direction than the previous administration. And obviously that's not going to come without some level of division. But also there's a number of polls out that suggest that a lot of these policies are fairly popular.
One example, Biden's executive order allowing transgender people to once again serve in the U.S. military. 70% of Americans supported this in a Gallup poll in 2019. Biden's call for unity and his initial policy steps, say presidential observers, mirror the approach taken by former President Barack Obama, who entered office during a financial crisis. Biden confronts a different crisis, the COVID-19 pandemic, blamed for the deaths of more than 400,000 Americans and a ravaged economy. If history is a guide, Biden has a tough road ahead. Nicholas Beauchamp is an assistant professor of political science at Northeastern University. He spoke to VOA over Skype.
The Obama stuff, I don't think that the messaging necessarily worked all that well in terms of bringing the right together with the left, and I don't think it's likely to work very well now either. But it seems to be that, you know, the judgment is that it's the best of a, you know, tough situation in terms of unifying a nation that's pretty heavily divided right now.
Biden says he supports the second impeachment trial of Trump, which is set to take place in the Senate on February 9th. The House impeached Trump, alleging incitement of insurrection for his actions leading up to the January 6th assault on the U.S. Capitol. Trump has defended his actions and denounced the violence that took place that day. But Senate Democrats insist Trump must be held accountable. When you put pen to paper, Biden's call for unity seeks to rally a nation over a shared set of democratic values, even as he implements sweeping policy changes that anger many Republicans. Azari sees no contradiction.
The two sides are going to fight about policy, and they should. They shouldn't unite necessarily on policy.
Republicans may accuse Biden of seeking to cancel his predecessor's legacy. Democrats accused Trump of the same 4 years ago. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, China toughened its language toward Taiwan Thursday, warning after recent stepped-up military activities near the island that independence means war and that its armed forces were acting in response to provocation and foreign interference. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. In the most ambitious U.S. effort to stave off the worst effects of climate change, President Joe Biden is aiming to cut oil, gas, and coal emissions and double energy production from offshore wind turbines through executive orders. His executive orders target federal subsidies for oil and other fossil fuels and halt new oil and gas leases on federal lands and waters. They also intend to conserve 30% of the country's lands and ocean waters in the next 10 years and move to an all-electric federal vehicle fleet. Former U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, who is Biden's envoy on climate change, says there is major work to be done.
We have a big agenda in front of us on a global basis. And President Biden is deeply committed, totally seized by this issue, as you can tell by this executive order. And by the other, the initiative of getting back into Paris immediately. That's why he rejoined the Paris Agreement so quickly, because he knows it is urgent. He also knows that Paris alone is not enough. Not when almost 90% of all of the planet's emissions, global emissions, come from outside of U.S. borders. We could go to zero tomorrow, and the problem isn't solved.
Biden has set a goal of eliminating pollution from fossil fuel in the power sector by 2035 and from the U.S. economy overall by 2050. Meanwhile, Australia is failing to keep up with the growing threat of extreme weather as global warming increases the risk in areas once thought to be safe. That according to a new report. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia is a land well used to nature's extremes. It's the world's driest inhabited continent, where droughts can last for years. The Black Summer bushfires of 2019-20 were the most intense on record. Heatwaves are by far its deadliest natural hazard. A new report by the Climate Council, an independent non-profit organisation, says the cost of extreme weather in Australia has almost doubled since the 1970s. It's warning the financial consequences of fires, floods, droughts, storms and sea level rises linked to climate change could soar, potentially costing the country's economy up to $76 billion every year by 2038. Robert Glasser is the former Special Representative for Disaster Risk Reduction for the United Nations Secretary General. He says Australia must make fundamental changes to planning new developments.
We'll be building the equivalent of roads and homes in flood zones in areas of extreme fire danger. And when those hazards strike, the damage will be severe. The second reason, increasingly important, is climate change, because we're now seeing that the places exposed to these hazards is shifting, the frequency and severity of the hazards are being amplified by climate change. And so you combine these two factors and we see the projections of increased impacts.
The year 2020 began in flames and ended with floods. It was Australia's fourth warmest year on record, while 2019 was the hottest and driest ever documented. While per capita levels of greenhouse gases are among the highest in the world, the centre-right government insists its environmental policies are responsible. Coal generates about 70% of Australia's electricity, but conservationists believe this sunny, windy and innovative nation should be a green energy powerhouse. The Climate Council report states that without stronger action, it becomes impossible for Australia to act consistently with the goals of the Paris Agreement, a legally binding international treaty on climate change. In October, an official inquiry into the Black Summer bushfires warned Australia would, in the future, face compounding disasters, where bushfires, floods and storms struck at the same time, or one after another. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Boeing has received a license from the U.S. government to offer its F-15EX fighter jet to the Indian Air Force. The Indian Air Force has planned to buy 114 multi-role aircraft to replace its Soviet-era fleet. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Pakistan's Supreme Court Thursday ordered the release of an Islamist convicted of beheading U.S. journalist Daniel Pearl, a decision that lawyers say left his family in complete shock. Ahmed Omar Saeed Sheikh, who was the main suspect in the 2002 kidnapping and murder of Wall Street Journal reporter Pearl, was acquitted by a panel of three judges. Mahmoud Sheikh, a lawyer for the accused, faced media after the ruling.
The Supreme Court of Pakistan has dismissed all those appeals which were filed by the Sindh government against the judgment of the Sindh High Court. Two petitions were filed by the family of late Daniel Pearl. Those two petitions have also been dismissed.
Pearl was investigating Islamist militants in Karachi after the September 11, 2001 attacks on the United States when he was kidnapped. His case grabbed headlines globally after a video of his beheading emerged weeks after he was abducted. Happening in Asia, Hong Kong people are less trusting of Chinese novel coronavirus vaccines than those made in Europe and the United States, with fewer than 30% of people questioned in a survey finding China's Sinovac vaccine acceptable. Stay with us for the latest news from and about Asia at voanews.com and all of our digital platforms. As part of an ongoing project in Pakistan's Sindh province, nutritionists are trying to make a unique, nutritious, and drought-resistant tree called moringa a part of the local diet, all to help alleviate malnutrition. Mohammed Saqib has details from Matiari Sindh in this report narrated by Bezan Hamdan.
Child malnutrition has been a major public health problem in Pakistan. According to government figures, 4 out of 10 children in the country's southern province of Sindh have developmental problems stemming from malnutrition. Because of drought, farmers are unable to grow fruits and vegetables, while poverty makes it impossible for many to shop at local markets. But nutritionists, in collaboration with the Sindh government and Karachi's Aga Khan University Hospital, are advocating using the moringa tree as a dietary supplement. Because the leaves of the drought-resistant tree are rich in nutrients, nutritionists are calling for planting thousands of them.
We thought to come up with a solution that is within the community. Then we designed the project of planting moringa trees, which is an indigenous tree that grows in Pakistan and India.
Experts say the project is not just about planting moringa trees, but also educating people about its benefits.
We have to plant 40,000 trees in the entire district. For this, we don't just have to plant trees, but also to educate people about its benefits and usages.
Nutritionists say the leaves of the moringa, also known as drumstick tree, are rich in protein, potassium, calcium, zinc, vitamins, and antioxidants.
The majority use its leaves. They also use dried leaves. They use its drumsticks as well to make different spices and sauces. Its flour is often used as curry, which tastes very delicious.
Some incense say they have already felt healthier by using the moringa leaves.
I remember seeing this tree when I was a kid grazing our goats. It is very useful, and I think it should be planted across the country.
The moringa tree, often classified as a superfood, has been used to fight malnutrition in some African countries as well. For Mohammed Saqib in Karachi, Pakistan, Bijan Hamdard, VOA News.
UN human rights officials are alarmed by Sri Lanka's lack of accountability for past crimes, warning it could result in a resurgence of the same kind of violations and abuse that triggered past armed conflict. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Sri Lanka's 26-year-long civil war with the Tamil Tigers ended nearly 12 years ago. Since then, UN officials say successive governments have done nothing to redress the population's grievances, hold perpetrators of crimes accountable, and provide justice and reparations to the victims of the war. A hard-hitting report issued by the Office of the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights finds impunity for grave human rights violations and abuses by all sides is more entrenched than ever. Human rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani tells VOA her agency has documented many cases of extrajudicial killings, enforced disappearances, arbitrary detentions, and other violations of international humanitarian law.
There have been many commissions of inquiry that were appointed by successive governments to look into the kinds of grave human rights violations that had been committed. But none of them have yielded any concrete results. This current government has moved beyond merely, a slow process of accountability to active political obstruction of accountability.
The report documents a pattern of intensified surveillance, harassment, and intimidation of civil society organizations, human rights defenders and victims, lawyers, and journalists. Of particular concern, it notes, is the increasing marginalization of Tamil and Muslim minorities. Authors of the report warn divisive and discriminatory rhetoric from the highest state officials risks generating further polarization and violence. Shamdasani says it is troubling to see many of the officials who are part of the current administration were in power when the conflict was ending and many atrocities committed.
Since last year, the president has appointed at least 28 serving or former military and intelligence personnel to key administrative posts. So these are people who remain in power. And what is really worrying is that some of these officials were actually implicated in alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity during the final years of the conflict.
Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet says the Sri Lankan government has demonstrated its inability or unwillingness to hold anyone accountable. Therefore, she is urging governments to investigate and prosecute alleged perpetrators of crimes in their national courts under an accepted system of international justice. Shamdasani says some of the government's extensive comments have been incorporated into the report, which will be formally presented to the Human Rights Council on February 24th. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Doug Bernard, and Amy Heibel. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Stay safe and enjoy your day.